What's up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about finding and testing out small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. Tunic is the game for this week's episode. Tunic is an isometric action-adventure game developed by Andrew Shouldis and released in 2022. The game is available on Mac, PC, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and 5, so pretty much everywhere. And what I like about the game, and just a little bit about it, it is an isometric adventure that's very similar to old-school Zelda games. Certainly a lot from like the Game Boy Zeldas as well as the Game Boy Advance ones. So we're talking like Link's Awakening, the Oracle games, Minish Cap, things like that. The game is well gated and there's a lot of like bouncing off with lock and key stuff. Like you can't go here yet, so you have to go over there. And so it might give a hint of like a Metroidvania, but it's tough with games like this because it kind of blurs the lines between all these sub-genres. There is minimal direction in the game, but a very unique learning and guidance system, which involves something that's kind of cute. And I really like how kind of meta it is. But in the fact that there's minimal direction, it really reminds me a lot of when we went through Animal Well. It's really not telling you where to go. You're just kind of bouncing off of walls, doing what you can, and then going in whatever direction sort of suits your fancy at that moment. And so it is kind of open explore, but you might have a little bit of memory frustration, like remembering where certain things were and how to get back there once you get the ability to move around in that space. The game presents itself very cutely, but it is super challenging, especially some of the boss battles are a bit fast-paced, and it gives a feel of games like Salt and Sanctuary or Withering Rooms, where you're kind of like ebb and flow a little bit, but you're getting used to move sets. I don't know if I would necessarily call this a Souls-like, but again, with certain games like this, it's blurring the lines between a lot of these subgenres, so it takes a little bit of everything. But overall, it sort of presents itself, again, like an old school Zelda, almost like Oceanhorn tried to do, or even Crypt Custodian. This is a far superior Oceanhorn, I would say. And even so with like Crypt Custodian, which is a game that we did like. The game released for an MSRP of $29.99, and that is the price today. And it does have physical versions, so they came out in retail, so you can pretty much get them anywhere. There's a regular and a deluxe. I think the regular goes for like $40. At least that's what I'm seeing on like Amazon or whatever. The Deluxe, I found on Fangamer for $45 and I actually just ordered it. But in other places, I think it was even higher than that. So if you're interested in that, and the Deluxe version has like a map similar to the map that you might get in the game that has things marked off. So I jumped on that because I thought that would be really useful. And also everything else in the Deluxe edition looks kind of nice. The runtime of the game, if you're running straight through, you might beat the main story in like somewhere between 10 to 15 hours. But if you're a completionist, taking your time, being thorough, trying to find all of the secrets and get all the chests and stuff like that, which is kind of where I am, it could take you over 20 hours to be that completionist. So I've been playing it on my PS5 as well as on my Portal. I got it on sale for $14.99, so half off. Great deal. And I've put in on PSN, it says I put in like 14 hours, but I think I let the game sit for a little bit. So I'm probably around 10, maybe even a little less of like actually being in there playing the game. But I would say that I'm about halfway through at least. I won't give away too much about like what needs to be done, but that's been my experience. And I think if you buy it on PS4 or PS5, you get it on both consoles. So that's pretty cool for that. And the developer, we mentioned him. His name is Andrew Shouldis. I believe this was his first game. It took him about 6 or 7 years to put it together, but he did the bulk of everything. And I had certainly heard about this game when it came out back in 2022. Everyone was talking about it. I think it was up for or even won like Indie Game of the Year. So all outlets were covering it. It was a top indie game that year. I kind of like to hold off on things that are hyped. So I waited for it to kind of cool down before I decided to dive in. Let's talk gameplay for Tunic, and let's go over just some of the basics. So like we said, this is a top-down isometric view, so that is going to be constant. You can't actually change the view or the camera. So think of like Super Giants games like Transistor, things like that, that have that sort of fixed angled view from up the top. But you can move your character freely, and you can dodge roll, and this will be like one of very few spoilers that I'll give to you, but if you dodge roll and hold X, you can actually run, and the game tries to give you that advice at some point. So you can dodge roll. You do have a stamina meter, which we'll talk about in a little bit. You can lock on to enemies with a button that, if you hold it, can lock on to the nearest enemy, or there's a separate button that you can toggle it on and off, which is nice. And then you can cycle through if there are multiple enemies, like who you're locking on. So this is right out of like a Souls-like, although mini games are doing that now. And you can assign different things to one of three buttons. So they could be weapons, throwables, consumables. Again, very similar to like Ocarina of Time. You have the C buttons, so you can assign pretty much anything to three buttons and use them at your leisure. So let's get into the pacing of this game, because this is really what we need to talk about first. So I'm not going to try to spoil much in the game, because the game has its own system for you to learn, and you're going to learn by self-discovery, whether it's trial and error, using things, going places, deciphering things, or almost like a fill in the blank. Not that you'll literally be typing words or anything like that, but there might be like words missing in a phrase that are trying to allude to something, and you can fill it in mentally to figure out what that thing does. And this is done by there being an in-game manual, like of the game, almost like if you bought it physically, an instruction manual, but it's in-game, and you are collecting pieces, which are like pages or series of pages in the manual. So you're kind of slowly getting a little bit, and it can come out of order. It's not like you're going to get the first page first or the second page second. So it's very interesting how the game unfolds instruction to you. Now, what's interesting is that you don't actually need, I would say, to find the manual pieces or even use the manual, but there are a lot of things that you're going to discover just by kind of reading pieces of the manual, and that's how you realize that you can do certain things. And the manual itself is really fun, really nice. It's got like pictures or diagrams of like your character or like items that you might see alongside like a ciphered language. So think like Chance of Sinnar, but a lot more vast. So it's not going to be like you're figuring out what each character means, like what letter or what word, but it's going to be presented to you in this kind of weird hieroglyphic language so that you don't know what it means. But the pictures and the diagrams will allow you to kind of coincide and reference different things. Now, what's interesting is as you play through the game, depending on how many pages you have, notes will start to appear in the margins. They'll like populate as you do things. Now, the game's not going to make a big deal out of whenever something gets written in the manual or whenever something changes over, but you do want to often check back to it, especially once you get new pages or you do new things or you
find a new item or something like that. So even in the hieroglyphics or the ciphered language, words will start to appear in English as you like use things enough or go to places enough or do things enough. And again, it's not kind of telling you, but as you, in terms of the meta, learn of these things, the game is pretty intuitive about like putting it on the board or putting it in the manual. Like, hey, now you realize this. And even if you don't realize that you realize it, the game will populate it in the manual so that the next time you go look at it, you're like, oh yeah, I did know that. Or like, duh. Or like, oh my gosh, I actually didn't realize that that thing that I was already doing, I knew that I could do it. So things like that, it's really interesting and kind of unique how it does it. So the manual aside, I would say the game has a complete lack of direction or nudging. So aside from you picking up manual pieces and reading them and kind of surmising on your own, the game is not telling you anything. Okay, so you have the manual, you have certain symbols, but the goal of what you're doing, nothing's ever really explained or alluded to. So you can surmise this from the context, whether it's in the environment, whether it's, you know, where you can and can't go. And again, this is right out of Animal Well, so if that's a game that you really liked, I think this will be right at home for you. So in trying to surmise or figure out what's going on, of course, there's going to be a lot of open exploration. Now, the game will kind of try to gate you in certain ways, in like a go until you can't, you know, find the key or find this item or this weapon, then you can start to traverse this way or that way and potentially go back to old areas. Again, very Metroidvania in that very minute aspect. But it's interesting because I feel like the game does this more than other games, and I don't necessarily mean that in terms of physically gating you, but rather like the intention or the sequence of what you're coming across. And that could be related to the manual and the pieces. I do think they're placed in very specific locations, and it's almost like when this is in this location, you pick it up, maybe you'll look at it, maybe you won't. For 5 minutes or an hour or whatever, but now that is sort of in your pocket. And when you choose to discover it or make that aha moment, that's really on you, but it's on the table. So I think it's a very interesting design. It's up to the player to realize it. And so it kind of puts all the onus on the player to be like, hey, we're giving you these breadcrumbs and it's up to you to kind of figure it out. You don't need to explicitly figure it out. You don't need to know what every symbol means or what every word is or what it's doing. But the game sort of puts those breadcrumbs in order and it relies on not just the manual, but also the environment kind of bouncing you off of what you can and can't do. So then as you sort of move along in the game, the bubble of where you can go does expand. Eventually, there are many ways for you to traverse. Now, there are, of course, some issues with this. So I've mentioned like memory and remembering where certain things were, or like, oh, I remember where there was that door and I went in that place and I couldn't do anything then. I can do something now, but I don't remember where that is. So that can be an issue. The overwhelming options of where you can go, this is something that I felt pretty early in the game. And I think when my wife actually tried to play this for a little bit, she was pretty overwhelmed. So this can definitely be an issue with not having that instruction. And sometimes it can lead to like not being sure what I should focus on right now. And this can be alleviated a little bit in that there are sort of contained areas in the game. So there's sort of like a main overworld, but then you can go off the screen, which we'll talk about in a little bit, where you can go to a contained area. And so when you're in that contained area, you might feel like, oh, let me just finish this area because I feel like this is something I need to solve here. So it's not necessarily perfect, but it is something that you can rest easy on where like when you go to another area, they're kind of meant to be self-contained so that you can kind of go in and go out and only focus on when you're in there, what is in there. So let's talk traversal in the game. So obviously you're moving your character. The camera does pan with you. So depending on if you're in like the main overworld or whatever, as you're moving, the camera moves with you. If you ever come to the edge of an area, it'll go to a black screen and then you'll go on to another area. So this is like the equivalent of any kind of RPG or anything where like you go to a door and like it goes black and then you go out to another area. This is primarily when you're going to be going between areas, or it could also be when you're going into a doorway to go into a room or things like that. Going room to room within a contained area, like if you're in a building or in a dungeon or whatever, it'll have you go room to room, but it won't do like a black screen like it's loading another area. It'll just kind of switch the darkness. So now you're in a new room and like where you were before is now dark. This is more continuous as you're traversing. And again, this could be going through a doorway, going between rooms of an area. When you're in an area, what you're going to be traversing through, there'll be stairs that you're just walking up, ramps. Some of them are pretty skinny, so like you have to line it up, going up a ramp. Some of the things could be makeshift, like a pillar is down, and now all of a sudden, like that's a ramp that you can walk up. So you'll get used to sort of the variability of what you can traverse up or through. There'll be a lot of ladders, and when you get to the base of a ladder or the top of a ladder, a prompt will come up with the X button. There will be shortcuts that you unlock. So it could be bridges that you need to knock down. It could be ropes that you need to drop, ladders that you need to drop. And a lot of hidden paths. Now, this is going to be a major, major thing in this game, especially if you're stumped, you don't know where to go. You need to make sure to check all of your corners and things like that. So the way that the game unfolds this is the fact that your isometric angle is fixed. So you're fixed at this like top 45 degree angle. And so there will be in this three-dimensional world, like corners that you go around where you can't see your character anymore, but you'll still see sort of an outline of them. And so you need to go around these things. You need to check to see if there are alternate paths, because there's going to be a lot of hidden paths behind things, behind buildings, behind walkways, all kinds of things like that. So anytime that you're going to the end of something, like check all four ways, check all corners, check anything behind. Anytime there's visual blockage where you are walking behind something, there's almost certainly going to be like a branched off path. Anytime you see waterfalls and you're walking in the water, you probably can go under the waterfall. Again, that should be nothing new, certainly out of Zelda. But just be thorough, because this is going to be something that you're experiencing a lot and could be what could alleviate you being stumped about where to go, because all of a sudden you go around a corner and it leads to another path and that's a shortcut. Now you can unlock something. So just be thorough. And of course, as you're traversing, you're going to be collecting a lot of things, scavenging. So you're going to get a lot of the currency, and you get it from killing enemies. You get it from potentially breaking pots or boxes. You're going to see a lot of treasure chests. They're going to be everywhere. And these are often going to be the sign of a hidden path or a way to access this sort of remote chest that you can't clearly see a way to get to. And when you get two chests, you're either going to get currency that you can use in the shops, you're going to get items, it could be weapons to use, consumables, throwables, things like that, or upgrade materials. I'm not going to get too heavy into upgrade materials because it's still kind of a question mark to me, but things that are sort of permanently in your inventory that you can't use. And of course, you're going to be collecting pieces of the manual, which are like these sort of white sparkling diamonds that are sitting there. So this is going to be something that you want to collect. I would suggest that you collect, especially if you're getting stumped a lot. Using the manual is something that can really be helpful. So progressing in this game, again, I'm trying not to spoil anything because I feel like that's part of the game. The game is built on your self-discovery of what to do, what's going on, what works, what doesn't work. So I will say, again, there's no clear objectives. There will be major things that you have to do in kind of a sequence, and you can think very Zelda, like, oh, you need to do these two things or go to these three places to unlock the next thing to do or whatnot. And a lot of the things that you're doing that are major, again, are in these sort of contained areas where you'll go to a contained area and then you have to work your way through it kind of in a loop, like it'll loop back to the beginning of that area, of course, when you unlock shortcuts. And as you're moving through these areas, there will be these bonfires that you come across a lot. Again, reference to Souls-like games. So you'll be able to go to the bonfire and sort of pray to it, and it'll reheal you, but it'll reset all the enemies. And when you rest at a bonfire, this will be your respawn point if you happen to die. When you're in the contained areas that are sort of like the major areas to progress through, the frequency of these is a lot higher, I would say. Less in the main overworld because you're kind of traversing just to get from point A to point B despite having to go through enemies. But it's going to be easier and less intentional for where they're placed in terms of where you respawn. So when you're in these contained areas, the bonfire that you rest at is going to be indicative of like where in the contained area you are. And of course, if you unlock shortcuts, that'll make it easier to go back to the beginning of that contained area, so on and so forth. And each of these contained areas or major things that you have to do are going to have some kind of a boss at the end. And I really do like the bosses. We'll talk about bosses when we get to combat, but that's going to be sort of like the main got to get through at the end of the area to unlock the thing to progress the game forward. And you will get these sort of plateaus of things that you've unlocked and now you need to go back and revisit certain things. It's not major, but it definitely gives that, again, hint of Metroidvania. Like, oh, I have this thing. Now maybe I can go see all the things that I feel like I can unlock at that point. Again, it might bring a little frustration remembering where things are. But I would say one of the main hurdles in terms of your progression is just you having these aha moments. So like we talked about before, the game is very intentional about when it's giving you pieces of the manual, when certain things in the manual are starting to be translated. It's just up to you whether you realize them or not, because if you don't, you might have situations where you're going to get overwhelmed or confused or frustrated about where to go. But if you're not looking at what the game gives you and sort of making those clicks in your head, that's really going to prevent you from progressing. And I feel like that is going to be frustrating for a lot of people, because the design of the game, most people might say, shouldn't be a puzzle or shouldn't be something that you need to solve. It should be spelled out for you. Well, that's not the case here. And so your intuition or your looking at all that you have available is really going to be what progresses you forward, because sometimes you might have access to an ability or something that you can progress, but you don't know that you have it. It might be because you're not trial and erroring enough. It might be because you're not trying to decipher what's in the manual enough, but sometimes your progression is awaiting your discovery or your realization. And again, that might be a little frustrating for some people, but it is how the game hinges itself. And I think one example would be something like fast travel. I think that you have access to fast travel pretty early in the game. You just don't realize it. And that's something that I now, like halfway through the game, realize that I have. And it's like I almost don't even have a use for it because I've developed my way of traversing at my speed or whatever. So let's talk about combat and enemies. So you're going to come across a lot of single enemies, a lot of them in groups, but enemies are going to be everywhere. Around every corner, you're going to see pockets of enemies. Now, there are a limited number of types, but you will see the types sort of evolve or have more evolved versions as you progress through the game. So you're going to have sword wielders. You're going to have sword wielders that also have shields. You're going to have enemies that shoot projectiles, some that are melee and projectile. If you get too close, they'll smack you. Some that are projectile only. Some are exploders. Some give off AoEs. Some apply statuses like burn or freeze. But what's tough is that these enemy groups are going to come in combination. So you're not just going to have a group of all sword wielders. You're going to have a group of sword wielders and then people with projectiles behind them, or, you know, moving at different speeds to get to you or to shoot things at you. So you have to be aware that these can get a little complex. It reminds me a lot of Trigger Witch. Like, you're going to come across these pockets of enemies that are just like three different types, but they're spraying or coming at you in all the ways that they can. So you have to figure out how to deal with them collectively as well as individually. Now, on the surface, if you're looking at this or you're just starting to play, you might look at the combat as very much swipe, swipe, dodge away, come back in, swipe, swipe, dodge away, rinse and repeat. And if you treat it that way, I feel like you're going to get bored with the game, as well as things are going to be challenging to you and you're going to feel like you're just banging your head against the wall. But there are other strategies that make this more complex and yet easier for you. So some of the advanced things to consider, so enemies do have a swipe arc, especially the sword wielders, other things that'll like bite you and things like that. There's an arc that they're hitting in and a sequence in terms of timing. So whether it's swipe one, swipe two, there might be time before the second swipe where you can get in and get a couple hacks and maybe even interrupt them. But the swipe arc is interesting because you don't always need to dodge. You can just kind of go to one side of it where you know the swipe is not going to hit you and get some extra attacks in. So that could really save your dodge. So it could be just more about the placement of you and the timing between their attacks. So if you're going through the game and you're just dodging, 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 eventually it's going to get tiresome, or it's just not going to work because of the enemies. Other things to consider, there is enemy-friendly fire. Now, this is interesting because it doesn't always work with like the same types of enemies. I think it's like lesser ones can get hit by higher ones. So enemies that swipe with a sword, sometimes they can hit other enemies, like ones that are shooting projectiles, as well as ones that shoot projectiles. If lower level enemies get in front of them, between you and them, you can just have them kill them and it'll just take care of itself. So you want to take notice of that. Also, there are enemies that do AoEs. Like if you kill them, they will take a moment and then they'll explode and they'll hit any enemy around them. So you really want to take advantage of that. And you can also use your environment. So if there are people shooting projectiles, like you can hide behind blocks or barrels or things like that, or pots. There are some objects in the environment that are exploding, and you can actually lock onto them and shoot them with something. So that's really nice. You can even get sort of a sneak attack before enemies see you. And you will pick up a lot of items like throwables, like different bombs, fire bombs that'll cause fire, freeze pots that'll freeze enemies. So those status effects can go both ways. As you're messing around with enemies, again, you have that lock on. When you're locked onto an enemy, it'll show their health bar, which is really helpful because you might want to kill the one with low health. And of course, you can cycle through to the different enemies if you're locked onto one, if you're toggled on. This can get a little janky when you have a lot of flying enemies kind of going up. I can't always get to them when I cycle through, so that gets a little frustrating for me. And the bosses in this game, these bosses are tough. I died to a couple of them. I died like 10 to 20 times. So they are a lot larger than other enemies. They will sometimes have multiple weak points or points to target or lock onto. And then they'll have a pretty large HP bar that's sort of sectioned off. A lot of these bosses have extensive move sets, things that you need to get used to, timing, avoiding AoEs, playing them enough to know what's coming. In that aspect, again, I'm going to make this comparison. It is a bit Souls-like, very much like Salt and Sanctuary, the large scale of like Jotun when we played that game. But just getting used to their move set, trying to figure out what's coming next, figuring out the best strategy. It reminds me a lot of like going into a boss in like a Dark Souls or a Bloodborne or something like that. And let's talk about your character. So you will have a couple bars. You'll have a health bar, stamina bar, and eventually you'll get sort of an MP bar. We won't talk about when you get that, but hopefully that is something that you will access. The stamina is primarily for your roll. When you've rolled too much and it's depleted, it'll blink red and you have to wait for it to get all the way up. I think if it's red and you take damage, you take like 150%. So be aware of that. You don't want to get down to the red blinking stamina. You will get health potions, almost like an Estus flask. This is something that you'll come across and be able to get more of. You can do this in battle, you know, do like a quick drink. I don't think it takes that much time, but you'll also have various consumables that could also give you health. So you can kind of balance those when you run out of health potions. But once you use a consumable, it will be gone. You can always get more, though, at the shops and things like that. Upgrades can be found. I'm not going to spoil anything, but these are basically items that will stay in your inventory and you can't use. I think there's a way to apply them, but I don't know yet. And of course, you can collect and buy and equip a lot of different throwables. Some of them are weapons, like you can have multiple weapons that'll do different things, but you'll have to go into the menu, assign them. And the thing that's tough is you can only assign three at a time, but if you run out of like a consumable, that one button will be blank and you'll have to go into the menu and assign them, but the game doesn't pause when you go to the item menu. So be aware of that. That can be very challenging to make sure that you assign something else and not get hit. What is nice though, just a little kind of quality of life thing on the item menu, whenever you go into the menu, the cursor will stay wherever you last put it. So if you want, you can easily put it on the next item that'll replenish and then quickly pop into the menu and then click that button and all of a sudden it's in. And then finally, in terms of accessibility, there are difficulty options in the game. I'm playing on normal. I think there's normal, reduced damage, which is like minus 50%, and then no fail, which is basically like a casual mode or whatnot. Anytime you die, you will respawn at the statues. I think you'll lose some of your currency. But where you died, you can go back and you can find the ghost of you to retrieve your lost currency. So that's nice. The game is interesting because you can really play it your way. So we talked about using the manual. Eventually, there will be kind of a map in the manual. You can use it to whatever extent that you want. I would suggest if you are confused or frustrated or banging your head against a wall, don't just, you know, try to tough it out or try to be old school Zelda and like, well, there's no instructions, I'm just going to keep going. I think it would be a lot more in your interest to take advantage of this aspect of the game that is kind of a source of charm, I would say, in a weird gameplay way, that it's providing it to you, but it's still, you know, not spelling it out for you. You still have to put the pieces together yourself. So play your way, play what makes it nice for you. I am always going to suggest to people, like, don't play a game just to be frustrated. Like, find a way to not be frustrated or to alleviate that frustration. And I think the game provides that for you. Be kind to yourself as you're playing this and use what the game provides to you. Let's talk about the vibe of Tunic, and let's start with the visuals. So this game is cute and colorful. So the different characters, whether you or the enemies, they're plump, they're rounded characters, and their features are nice and rounded. It reminds me a lot of the remaster of Link's Awakening or the Echoes of Wisdom that came out fairly recently, the Zelda games. Very nice and cutesy, not quite cartoonish, but just like rounded edges, making the game seem very approachable. The enemies, they're going to wear a lot of colorful garb, primarily dark, but like highlights of like reds and blues and things like that. They're going to have glowing eyes. So that is an indicator that you have enemies, like yellow glowing eyes. Your eyes are going to be these sort of small black beads, which are kind of cute on your plump little fox character. Some of the enemies are going to be humanoid-ish. Some will be blobs, some will be versions of animals, some will be flyers that are flying around that might be mechanical, they might actually be like birds or bats or things like that. The environments that you're going to come across, very simple, I would say, monotone at times. Like if you're in the overworld where it's just like grass, like the base that you're walking on is just green. If you're in a place that's like stone, it's like just gray. So it's very one note with the colors. It's not trying to do too much the base that you're walking on, but some of the things that might get added on top would add a little bit of, you know, pizzazz or whatever. So some of the stone might have patterns on it. Things might be glowing that might be indicating something is happening. It's very blocky overall, I would say. Like there'll be like the base that you're standing on. And then if you can't go in a certain direction, it'll just be like a block higher of the base. Kind of these dice shaped blocks or cubes that are put around really just to kind of differentiate levels. Same thing with ramps that you go up. It's just like a ramp version of that single color moving up to another level. Water is around most of the platforms, especially in the overworld. You're going to see just water kind of dictating that you can't go certain places. But features will get added on top. So like when you're in the overworld and the base is green, you're going to see grass on top of it, like little blades of grass, and you can cut them very much like Zelda, Link to the Past, things like that. A lot of the environments you're going to see are going to have ruins, whether it's like pillars that are crumbled or archways made of stone. It certainly gives the vibe of like an ancient society or something like that. Very similar to Chance of Sinnar, although a lot more in ruins. Chance of Sinnar, like a lot of the environments are a lot more put together or like current, like they're still in rain. In this, it's like things are kind of wearing away, but you can definitely see like the intricacies of a society that was here potentially. The use of darkness is a big thing in this game. So when you go into caves or into rooms, the area outside of it is all darkness. Also, like some of them might intentionally be dark, as well as like the outline of a room. Like if you see almost like a little doorway cut out, it's very subtle, but that's trying to tell you like, hey, there's a doorway here. It doesn't have a door. It's just all darkness beyond it. So using those visual cues of darkness or things outlined within the darkness can be helpful in sort of navigating through. And the manual that you get pieces of and put together, this is really cute, really surreal too, because it looks almost like a manual would for this game. Like it's drawing the characters or the diagrams a little differently than how they appear in the game, sort of more like comic booky or cartoonish or even like manga type. It's really nice, and the diagrams that you see, very helpful, and the language as well, like the sort of hieroglyphic or ciphered language, is really intricate and really nice to see. I don't think you're meant to like match up symbols and try to decipher the language that way, but it is really intricate how things are displayed. In terms of audio, Really like the music in this game. Very simple, simple vibe, sort of this ambient kind of synth vibe going on. Very positive and soothing, I feel like, especially when you're on the overworld. It just makes you feel relaxed. It makes you feel like everything is just not that hectic. And that's a stark contrast to Legend of Zelda games, especially Link to the Past. Like that opening sequence when you go out in the rain, like the music is so dark and intentional and like something is wrong. Here, it doesn't try to exude too much stress or anything on you. It's almost like trying to get you to relax while you're playing this game. And I think that can be helpful, especially if you're getting frustrated. But in terms of common soundtracks, it sounds a lot like combinations of like Chance of Sonar, a little bit of Hat in Time, like the slow aspects, like when you're in the different warp levels or whatnot, trying to get the timepiece, like the slow sort of vibe. Really like that. But other times it really goes full orchestral, like Austin Wintory type stuff. So really, really love the music in this game. And then finally, in terms of themes and settings, you're a fox. You are a cute little fox on a quest. And I don't know if there's some kind of fox society you're trying to save, like an ancient society. Certainly the bonfire statues that you come across, they are like the fox goddess or whatever. So there's something about you being a fox and that connection there to the land. But also like ancient tech, you know, unlocking different things, getting powers or magical things. That's definitely going to be present in this. And then you, the fact that you're a savior or could be the savior. And there's talk of like the legendary hero and whatnot, like going to the hero's grave or whatever. It certainly reminds you a lot of Zelda, even a little like Twilight Princess, there being like a legendary hero, whether it's you or not, or supposed to be you or prophecy. I don't know. That's not laid out for you. And of course, the manual, very meta. Having the manual kind of breaking the fourth wall a little bit, like because it presents itself with page numbers and like this is the opening of the game and whatnot. And like, here's what to do here when you see this screen. I like that it makes that connection and that it incorporates it into like parts of you progressing as a player, not just like you playing a game and the world telling you what to do. Let's wrap up the conversation about Tunic. I really like this game. It feels like a true adventure. I like that there's minimal instruction. I like that it is self-discovery fueled. It definitely feels like an old school Zelda game where you're not really told much, but you have to figure things out just by trying things, exploring, maybe bouncing off a couple places that you can't go yet. The game is challenging, and I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It's more Souls-like or Metroidvania than it is action-adventure. I know at this point all these terms are fusing together, but it really is punishing, especially boss battles. Not banging your head against a wall is important. Like, you need to recognize what the game is providing for you, looking for windows in combat, like not just dodge roll, dodge roll, dodge roll. Like, you have to think outside the box. It is difficult. You will die. You will respawn. Unlocking shortcuts, certainly giving it that Souls-like vibe, as well as trying to figure out enemy movesets, boss movesets. Like, you need to take the time to figure out the best strategy. And there are some things that are super advanced. I feel like the inclusion of the manual, using it to understand and discover, it's very unique and it's very meta. I really dig that. It's something that I don't think I've ever experienced, and I really did enjoy that. But there are some deterrents. I feel like you can get lost in this world, and that can be frustrating if you're not taking hints or clues from the manual, if you're being stubborn or impatient with the combat. It's very easy to get overwhelmed, to get frustrated. I think that the options of where to explore can also be overwhelming. Finding things, forgetting things that were in an earlier area and you have to revisit or you want to revisit, that can get very frustrating. And of course, like, getting those aha moments may be too late. Finding those shortcuts may be too late. Like, I found fast travel, and I don't know if I really need it at this point. So that can be frustrating when the game lets you discover things on your own because it's not by the book or it's not standardized, and I feel like different players are going to get frustrated by that. In terms of value, $30 is steep, especially for a game that's branded as an indie game. Now, to me, that means nothing because the quality of the game is not reflective on who did it or how many people or what the budget was, at least in a general sense. And so I do feel like that might be tough for some people. I think 20 or 25 as an MSRP might be better for this game. I don't think that it really mattered because everybody was talking about it and I'm sure it sold really well. But I feel like getting this game for under 20 in a sale is a steal. Under 20 bucks, the value is just so great. I got it for 15. I'm so happy with that purchase, and I really want to sink my teeth into this. I don't know if I'll get everything in this game because I feel like that might touch on some of my frustrations of forgetting where certain things were or trying to match a place in my mind with a place in the game where I once was, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to find all those things. This is such a tightly knit experience. Despite the openness of the game, the placement of the manual pages, the leeway of the aha moments, it really creates a sandbox of self-discovery that I feel like for a lot of people is going to be a positive. But I feel like the game is as mentally challenging as you let it be. And I know that's not something that some people want to hear, but unfortunately, not every game is going to be for everybody. So I do think this is a unique experience, and I do think people should try it. And so I do highly suggest this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.